you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for waiting and being very patient. But we are back with another episode of the Believe You Me podcast. Of course, I went on vacation last week, tried to squeeze in another show, but long story, we'll keep it short. Didn't happen, as you know, but we've been very dedicated to the show for quite some time. In fact, I don't remember the last time we missed an episode like that. Of course, this is Monday's episode coming out on a Wednesday, but again, I was traveling. We were going to do it on Tuesday, but then Lewis is traveling and he's in a hotel with absolutely god-awful Wi-Fi. He tried his best, but whatever. Here we go. We're back. We're back on track. Harrington's filling in for Lewis. He'll be back on the second show this week. Back in our groove. I guess I've got to ask, but I don't really even care. But I will say, how you doing, Harrington?
I'm doing great, Mike. This is always an honor and a privilege to fill in for the great Luis J. Gomez. Yeah, I'm really excited for this, especially coming off of an incredible UFC pay-per-view over the weekend.
Yeah, no, they were great fights, and we'll get into all that good stuff in a moment. And of course, we got all the MMA news as well. Lots of things going on. I think you got some good topics for us, Harrington, to discuss and break down. But yeah, great fight at the weekend. As you may or may not know, I was down in Mexico, Cancun. Beautiful place, by the way. Never been there. I honestly didn't know what to expect. I'd never been, but my expectations, if I had any, were blown away. Absolutely fantastic. Could not have had a better time. All right, to be fair, in all reality, I guess I didn't see real Mexico. You know, I stayed in a beautiful 5-star hotel on the beach, which is owned by a multi-billion-dollar corporation that's based in America, no doubt. Do you know what I mean? So I didn't really get to see Mexico, but the experience that I had while I was there was fantastic. The staff were great. I did get out and see some of the nature. We went to these cenotes, these ancient sinkholes. That was absolutely fantastic. And just the people, the whole experience, the food, it was great. It was an amazing time. It really, really was. You ever been to Mexico, Harrington?
I have. I've done Cancun. I've done a couple different places in Mexico, just like the one day stop off on a cruise. I've never spent real time in Mexico. Mexico City is like that's a real bucket list item of mine. I want to see those square pyramids real bad.
Yeah, no, I actually went to Mexico City. Yeah, no, I forgot about that actually. But I was there commentated. See, that's the thing. When I'm commentating, you know, when it's usual times pre-COVID, and I'm sure hopefully we're going to hit post-COVID some point bloody soon, hopefully, but let's not get into all this fucking Delta variant shit that's going around. Oh my God, it's driving me crazy. But yeah, back in the day, everyone used to be like, you know, because when you're commentating, I'm not showing up, but like you go to China, then you go to Uruguay, then you go to London, then you go to Brazil, and people are like, wow, that sounds amazing. And then one of the trips was Mexico City. But of course, you just fly there, you land, you're tired, you're jet lagged, whatnot, you have meetings, then you got the fight. And then you fly home the next day at 6 o'clock in the morning. So you don't really get to see much. So I did go to Mexico City. I had one afternoon. I took a little walk around and saw some things. And I saw those ruins that you're talking about. I was going to go check them out. But it was a little bit of a drive. I was by myself. And I may or may not have been a little bit hungover and thought, fuck that. I'll do it another time. But yeah, anyway, Mexico. So it was great. But how does this pertain to the UFC 265, which took place at the weekend? Well, I'll tell you. So I hit up Twitter, of course. You need something these days. You got a big following. You go to Twitter. You find out all kinds of information. I said, okay, I'm here in Cancun, or I'm going to be in Cancun. Need somewhere to watch the UFC 265 pay-per-view. A, number one, because I'm a massive fan. But B, because I've got to do a pre and post show with BT Sports. So on the Sunday morning, I've got to do a post show. But that means I've got to see it. You know what I'm saying? Everyone came back and said Champion Sports Bar. As it happens, Champion Sports Bar was connected to the hotel. You just walk through like a tunnel and boom, you're there. And I'm like, oh, perfect. And a couple of the guys, the staff around the pool, they were UFC fans. So that, you know, they came and said hi and whatnot. And they said, yeah, we'll get you set up over there. We'll make some reservations and stuff. And I thought, oh, great. You know, I might get hooked up. Might get a nice table, get looked after, maybe get some treatment and whatnot. Fucking hell. Was I wrong?
They were all Luke Rockhold fans.
No. It wasn't anything to do with me. But I get over there, and I'm not trying to throw him under a bus here. But, you know, if you're advertising, I'm not trying to get him in shit, so maybe we should have just bleeped out over Champion Sports Bar or whatever. They're fucking, they're advertising the fight. Do you know what I mean? And I'm like, great, perfect. That's Saturday night fight taken care of. And I said to my wife and kids, because, you know, Callum wasn't there. Lucas doesn't care about the fights. Rebecca's, she's very much take it or leave it. You know, she will get into it if it's a big one. But, you know, on vacation, not so much. But I'm like, listen, guys, you know, this part of my life, Saturday night, we're not going out to a fancy restaurant. We're going to Champion Sports Bar. We're going to have some cheeseburgers. We're going to have some beers. And we're going to bloody enjoy it and go back to the room and have a great night. We walk in. They're showing it on an illegal stream. They're showing it on an illegal stream with, like, the worst sound ever. And just to top it off, it's in Spanish. I mean, fair play. We are in Mexico. Do you know what I mean? But if you're advertising it to tourists, one would assume they'd have it in British or English, should I say. So I tolerated that for a while. I'm like, nah, I can't do this. I can't do it, because, like, it just kept going off. It was all fuzzy. The sound was not in time with the audio. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't synced up and stuff like that. And I'm like, bollocks, let's go up to the room. ESPN Plus, there you go, we'll do that. But I go up to the room, ESPN Plus wouldn't work. I was trying to download VPNs, you know what I mean? I was trying to do everything I could to get it going, but the clock was ticking and it wasn't fucking working. Called the front desk, I'm having a mini tangent. I'm like, please, come on, I've got to watch this fight. I tried to go to the sports bar, but it's an illegal stream. Don't get me into that. I work for the UFC, I don't want to tell them. But I said, is there anything you can do? Anyway, long story short, we got it up and running, and there you go. The fights were good.
At what point in the night did you end up getting the card on?
Yeah, so it was just – so I had to, I missed the first two fights. I missed the Casey Kenny and Song Yudong, and then what – oh, no. Second one was Angela Hill versus Tisha Torres. So I caught the Tisha Torres, Angela Hill, and then after the fights – I went back and Googled all the prelims and stuff like that and watched them afterwards on the Sunday morning. So I saw everything. Great night fights as usual, but let's get into it. Obviously, the main event is the big one. That's the big talking point. I mean, man, Cyril Garn. Cyril Garn has just had a meteoric rise through the UFC. What is he now? 10-0? I think 10-0 now. And I think six of those fights inside the UFC. And that just shows how good this guy is. You know, I mean, he's torn through many great fighters, former champions, you know, Derek Lewis, heavy, heavy hitter, Jorginho Rosenstruik, heavy hitter, Junior Dos Santos, I think it was first round knockout, TKO, maybe early second round, I forget. But still, you know, he's had a steady rise, but a pretty quick rise, if you will. And he's passed the test every single time. And Saturday night, I think, you know, what we had in our hands, and everybody would agree with this, is that we had power versus technique to a certain degree. Of course, Cyril Garn's got power. He's a heavyweight, he's athletic, he's not overweight, he's not sluggish, he's an athlete, and he's a big one at that. So to say he hasn't got power would be crazy, but that was kind of the narrative going in. Derek Lewis is the guy, if he connects, he's going to knock you out, whereas Cyril's going to use a more strategic approach. And that's what we saw. You know, Cyril took his time, played it safe, and this was always kind of my fear for Derek Lewis, because come on, everybody's... How do you not love Derek Lewis? The guy's awesome. He's a great guy. He's helping out his community. When there's floods, he's out there helping people. He's funny on the mic. And he delivers generally when he fights. You know, so it's hard not to be a fan. Cyril Garn, I'm sure everything I just said applies to him. I'm sure he would go out there and help people in the floods. But he just hasn't had an opportunity yet. We'll see. We'll see. When Paris is flooding, we'll see how quick he is to get the pickup truck out. But no doubt he will. But still... And we can get into the ins and outs of it all. And the ins and outs are pretty obvious. You know, Garn picked him apart. He stayed on the outside. He picked him apart until it was safe. You know, he played it safe. He stayed away from the power. He was kind of playing a points game to start, which isn't a bad idea. Get somebody like Derek Lewis trying to get a read on his timing, trying to see what he's going to offer. Generally, it's most of the same thing. It's either a jumping switch kick or some big heavy hooks that he's going to throw with both hands. But he played it safe, and that's what you got to do. But then come the third round, he saw some openings. He had the timing. He knew he had the speed advantage. He knew he had the technical advantage. He's quicker as well. He had better footwork. You know, so realistically, when you break it down like that, Derek was, he was very much outmatched physically and mentally. Now I'll get to the more of what Cyril did well. But for me, when I saw Derek Lewis walk out, and I'm sorry, I know I'm chatting a lot. I'll let you get in a minute, Harrington. When I saw Derek Lewis walking out for his fight, I knew there was going to be an issue. I knew right then and there that, I mean, let me clarify that. I wasn't sure. I thought, whoa, does he look really focused or does he look really nervous? You know what I mean? Because it's hard when you're somebody like Derek Lewis, when you're the main event and you're in your home city and he's garnered quite a lot of fame now. He's a famous guy. People know who he is. He's one of the biggest stars in the UFC. Sure, he's not a Conor McGregor or someone like that, but he's one of the standout names for sure. People know and like and love Derek Lewis. So he's got a big following down there in Houston. And he's the main event. You know, there's a lot of pressure on his shoulders there. And that can make or break some people. And I honestly believe the moment... Now, even if the moment hadn't have got to him, I think Cyril would have won that fight. He's a better fighter. He's more technical. He's a better athlete. But still, I feel Derek Lewis, as you saw, didn't do much. He didn't do much. And it's just the moment. It's the bright lights. As I said, it can make or break you. The pressure sounds cliched. It can crush you or it can make diamonds. You know, but it really can. And, you know, and I think the whole entire moment got to him. Of course, when you combine that with the fact Cyril Garn's a big dude, he's in and out, he's fast, you've seen him knock people out, that's hard to overcome. But Derek Lewis had been in there with Francis Ngannou. There's a guy that ticks all those boxes and got more devastating power. But he wasn't gun-shy in that fight. I believe it was because he was the main event. I've been there myself. A lot of pressure. You're the hometown guy. You're selling the tickets. Everyone's cheering your name. And you've got to perform against a world-class monster. It's not a fucking easy thing to do, Harrington.
No, it certainly isn't. And I thought what was super interesting about this fight, like you said, that power versus, you know, the technique thing was very apparent because of the Jarzynho-Rozenstruik fight, because of the Alexander Volkov fight, right? We just seen Gon take that step up against the real heavy hitters in the heavyweight division, and he wasn't looking to mix it up and get into firefights and really pick these guys apart. He was fighting that point style that you were saying. This Derek Lewis fight felt so very different to me. You know what I mean? Like, it seemed like he was out early attacking that leg. Like, he was setting things up for later on in the fight, whereas in the Volkov fight, in the Rozenstruik fight, it felt like he was just trying to stay out of harm's way while accumulating points. This felt like he was setting up damage with intention to pay off in the later rounds of that fight.
Well, generally, that's what you want to do, you know, but he was still playing it safe, though. He was chipping away at the legs, which is a good thing to do against someone with big power like that. They generate it from the feet. You know, it all starts in the feet and it works its way up through the hips. So that's a good thing to do. And obviously, it's going to slow down his mobility. But then the more they engaged, the more he realized that he had the better speed, the more he realized he could get in and out without taking any damage. And certainly when they clinched, you know, gone. Bossed him in the clinch as well. You know, obviously he's got a great Muay Thai background. Muay Thai, there's a lot of clinch work in there. You know, boxing and slugging like Derek Lewis does, there's not too much of that. Even though he is more technical than what people give Derek credit for, it wasn't really on display Saturday night. So Cyril beat him in the clinch. He beat him on the footwork. He beat him in the speed and, of course, beat him in the power. And then when the time to finish came, you know, he knew he had him. He knew he was a sitting duck. You know, and for Derek, you know, I do feel... For the guy, I like the guy. I look forward to his next fight. But I think if he's honest with himself afterwards, he's going to be very disappointed in that performance, you know, because as I said, I've been there many times myself. Your main event, you're in the arena, you got 20,000 people, your name's flashing up, you're the hometown guy, everyone's screaming for you, your name's on the front of all the posters, it's on the programs, it's on the tickets, it's, you know what I mean? You've sold out the arena, it's a lot of pressure. And then you're in there and you're like, fuck, shit, man, this isn't going very well. Do you know what I mean? It's like every time I go, he's seeing it, he's reacting, he's countering me or whatever. And you can freeze. And I have been there, you know what I mean? But then at some point, and again, I'm not criticizing Derek Lewis, far be it from me to do that. I respect the man. I think he's great. But this is kind of what I saw, you know? You got to go for it. At some point, you got to say, well, and I've said, I've had this conversation with myself in the ring. It's like at some point, you got to say, well, this is what I signed up for. This is what I signed the contract to do this. And okay, I'm going to go forward. I'm going to try this and I might get clipped. I might get knocked out, but that is what I fucking signed up for. And he was waiting for the perfect opportunity to blitz him. He did try, you know, here and there, certainly in the second and third round as the fight progressed, he tried to be a little bit more aggressive, but Cyril was just too much, you know, and he was waiting for the perfect time. And when the time came to finish, you know, Cyril was fantastic. He was ferocious. He had a lot of power. Derek Lewis, God bless him. Tremendous heart on the man. You know, I think other people would have been finished a lot sooner than him. He absorbed quite a lot of punishment, but yeah, man, Cyril gone. He is legit. He is the real deal.
Dude, I did find that so funny. Anytime Lewis would like rush forward, Gom would literally like turn around and like run away from him. You know what I mean? Like there was actual moments in a heavyweight title fight where one man is running around the cage from the other and the people in Houston are booing. And Gom looked at him like, what am I supposed to do? Like this guy will take your head off with one shot. I cannot let him get close to me. I just thought that was super fun and interesting. What I did think though, that moment, right, where Gom did hurt Lewis and Gom was like rushing in, trying to find the finish. And Lewis at one point in there kind of tried to pull the exactly what we saw Tai Tuivasa did against Greg Hardy, right? Just like load up on that one big counter shot as Gom was rushing in. And you could see even in that moment, Gom was like super alert and ready to parry those blows inside. So there is like a part of my mind where I look at that and I'm like, if this had been a brawl all along, I still feel like Gom would have had the edge from the jump. You know what I mean?
Very, very likely. You never know. Derek Lewis is at his most dangerous when he's hurt, you know, kind of like, who was it? Was it Chet Gongo and Pat Barry? You know what I mean? When people are hurt, they're at the most dangerous sometimes. And Derek Lewis, even if he's got his eyes closed and he's swinging like a maniac, you know, if he connects, you'll go down. But still, well done, Cyril Garn. Commiserations, Derek Lewis. I do look forward to the return. He's going to be very upset with himself. He had a big opportunity there. Obviously, he was on a pretty good roll. His star is rising. He's got personality, but he crumbled. You know, he didn't live up to the expectation. You know, he'll be embarrassed. He'll be embarrassed, you know, but there's nothing wrong with that. That's healthy. It's healthy to be embarrassed after a situation like that because that forces you to readdress and come back better and stronger. You know, it's only natural afterwards to beat yourself up because he could have done better. The reality is, though, to your point, what you said a moment ago, Cyril Garn's probably the future of that division. You know, and I know everyone's high on Francis Ngannou. And of course, there's talk of John Jones and, you know, the Stipe Miocic still waiting in the wings. We'll get to that shortly. But Cyril Garn keeps passing the test time and time again. And then, you know, when you see the way he beat Rozenstruik, you see the way he beat Dos Santos and Volkov. I mean, the writing was already on the wall. But then when you combine the way Francis Ngannou fights and you look at the way Cyril Garn fights, you know, I mean, I would assume that Cyril Garn's going to be the favorite coming into that fight. But let's just talk about the ramifications of that fight for French MMA. It's insane because obviously, as we know, Cyril's French. He's from Paris. Ngannou comes from Cameroon, if I'm not mistaken, but he came through Paris. He was training at the MMA factory. They both trained together for a period of time. He's fluent in French, you know, so he very much represents France as well as Cameroon, I believe. And if the UFC don't do that main event, because of course that's what it's got to be now. He's the interim champ, champion versus champion or champ versus interim, whatever you want to call it. Don't start. It's got to take place in France because only, I think 18 months ago, maybe 2 years tops, MMA was banned in France. You know what I mean? Now it's legal. And we'll talk about the debut to go to France with Ngannou and Cyril Garn. I mean, they're both fluent in French. You know, imagine like that you're trying to launch French mixed martial arts or the UFC invasion on French land. You know, you send off Dustin Poirier or someone. I mean, don't get me wrong, Dustin Poirier is a massive star. We can't speak a lick of French. I don't know, maybe he can. He's from Louisiana.
Yeah.
Maybe that was maybe the worst person on the roster, you know.
Lee in all of his gear.
Yeah. All right, but someone, Some fucking redneck. You know, but most people don't speak French is what I'm
Bryce Mitchell.
Bryce Mitchell, there you go. You send over Bryce Mitchell. They're like, who the fuck is this guy? Or, who is this guy? Who the fuck is this guy? But still, yeah, they're the perfect people to send over. And then, obviously, because it's not legal there, I'm sure it still has a presence. You know, I'm sure they are not oblivious to the sport of the UFC or mixed martial arts, even though it's banned. Or it was banned, you know, there's still a presence there. I'm sure people still watch it. But then when you launch with that product and you're going on like the morning breakfast shows and TV shows, and you've got these two monsters carved out of stone, looking like ridiculous athletes, because a lot of the heavyweights, sometimes they could spare to lose a few. Not that you know, not that there's anything wrong with Derek Lewis or Taito Avarsa, but you know what? If you're trying to launch a new product and you bring out these two guys that are heavy hitters, they're knockout artists, there's not an ounce of fat on the pair of them, and they're absolutely gigantic. Do you know what I mean? That is how you start a French invasion if you're the UFC, and I just hope I get to go commentate.
I mean, Dana White already did come out and say that that is 100% what they're targeting. They want to do the fight in Paris. The only restriction on that is, you know, whether or not they're going to be able to do it with these goofy COVID guidelines that are going on right now. But that's Dana. That is 100% Dana White's focus. He wants to launch this product, you know, do that first thing in Paris. I mean, that would be incredible, right? There has to be a world tour around that fight. No,
I don't know about a world tour. I don't know about a world tour. Steady on, slow your roll, and stop calling the guidelines goofy, because they're not. People are dying, Harrington. Have a bit of respect. But, you know, it's a big fight. It's a big heavyweight fight. I don't think it's of the magnitude that would deserve a world tour. You know, this isn't George St. Pierre versus someone. It's a big fight. But Ngannou, and certainly gone, you know, he just came to fruition, realistically. It's a massive fight for European MMA, though. You know, and as I say, I hope I get to be involved, because not that I have anything against commentating in Arkansas or Kansas City or Greenville, North Carolina. Beautiful place, Greenville. Love it. But you want to send me on a plane to Paris, France? I'm down. Let's go. What else on that better topic before we move on? Anything, Harrington?
So, I mean, this was just interesting. My roommate and I were having this argument the other day. He was saying, you know, Ciryl Gane is heavyweight GSP. Right. Just the most complete fighter, can absolutely maul you with the wrestling if he has to, but is, you know, just the smartest, safest, most technical fighter we've ever seen fight at heavyweight. Do you agree?
Who's your friend? What's his name?
He's Frank. He works here at Gas Digital. He does some of the art for us. So please be kind.
Frank's a fucking moron. Ciryl Gane, he can't wrestle. He's like a typical European style martial artist. Oh, don't give me it. Oh, but he took down such and such. Great, great. I'll take people down. I'm not a wrestler, although I did take Callum down recently. No, I can wrestle. I've dedicated years and years and years of my life to learning how to wrestle. Ciryl hasn't done that. He's only been in the UFC 2 minutes. Of course, he'll drill a few takedowns and whatnot, but he's got some submissions on the ground. We've seen them on display. Of course, the kickboxing, the stand-up prowess is there. But the weak area for Gane, in terms of what you're saying, in terms of being complete, would be wrestling. He's not a collegiate wrestler. He hasn't dedicated hours and time and time and time again. So that is the problem for him, because I do believe right now at heavyweight, I mean, who's he going to fight? Francis Ngannou. That's a good fight for both men. Both men, it's a stylistically favorable matchup to both of them. However, I do believe Ciryl's probably more technical. Francis has got the bigger power. You know, they're both athletic. They're both fast. Certainly Ngannou is faster than Derek Lewis. It's a great fight. But it's good, because neither man's realistically going to take the other man down. And if Stipe Miocic couldn't get Francis Ngannou down with this French wrestling, you know, that Ciryl has, and you say it's the most complete fighter out of between him and GSP, I just don't see it, my friend. I do not see it at all.
You know what? It might be the accent. Maybe that's what he's thinking. The accent, the bald head, you know.
Yeah, never quote Frank on this show again. He does the artwork. By the way, the artwork thumbnail started to look like orgies. Okay, tell Frank, I'm not into it anymore. We need it cleaner. Less orgies, less naked people with one woman in the middle and six dudes either side. It's not a good look, Frank. Okay, we need to talk. Step into my office. Why? Because you're fucking fired. All right, let's just take a quick second to talk about the Hydro Jug. The Hydro Jug is a unique water bottle designed to help you drink more and refill less. Listen, this day and age, you want want to live long, everybody knows the secret to life is water. Water literally is the liquid of life, and you want to drink as much of it. It's going to flush out tons of toxins. It's going to give you more energy. It's going to make you feel good. It's going to make you shed excess water. Believe it or not, that's how you get rid of all that bloating. You drink on more water and it will be released. But mainly, you want to stay healthy. Listen, so we're talking to you today about the Hydro Jug. Harrington, losers told me you absolutely love this thing. You have it on you everywhere you go, mainly because you're homeless, so you got to carry your things everywhere. But talk about the Hydro Jug, please. Tell me why you love it so much.
Well, while I'm no longer homeless, I will tell you this. I don't leave home without it. I love my Hydro Jug. I take it everywhere. I usually fill it up with ice the night before, fill it up with water. It's still cold the next day because it is insulated. It has that like nice camo lining that I think looks pretty badass. You know, and it keeps everything, keeps everything nice and ice cold. Grab a drink first thing in the morning. Cool thing is, right, I like to drink a gallon of water a day. So I fill this thing up once, like I said, overnight in the morning, bang that out halfway through the day, fill it up again. If I can finish that by the end of the day, I've taken down a whole gallon of water, and I know my body feels a lot better when I'm taking in that much water.
Rebecca loves it as well, because normally she used to use a Hydro Flask. She takes that to bed, and then I always get thirsty in bed. I'm always trying to get her water. You would think that water is like the Holy Grail or gold or something like that, because if I take her water and I take a sip, she gets really pissed off. I'm like, calm down. It's just water. She's like, yeah, but that's my water, and now it's almost gone. Now I've got to go downstairs to bed. Now if the Hydro Jug, it holds so much, that is not an issue, and we're having less arguments. It does hold half a gallon. The wide opening mouth makes it easy to add supplements if that's what you want to do. I saw the first quenching electrolyte flavor packs. It is dishwasher safe. It is BPA free, which means no harmful chemicals. And listen, we're going to try and jazz it up as much as possible because we're doing an ad read. The fact is, it's a water bottle, but this thing has a cool carry-on strap. You can strap your iPhone to it as well, so you can free up your hands. It comes in a nice cool designs, and it holds half a gallon of water. Okay, Harrington, is there anything else that I'm missing?
I will tell you this. I had an issue with something. I'm a dummy, right? And I put like the both straps on one of the two straps on the thing. So, I kind of wore out my strap a little bit. I hit them up. Immediately, customer service got back to me, said, that's an issue we'll fix. They sent me out a new sleeve literally, a day after hitting them up. Their customer service could not be any better. They're super attentive and very nice people.
And you know why that is, Harrington?
Because
they offer a money back guarantee. If this doesn't work out for you, send it back. They'll give you your money back. So go to thehydrojug.com, enter the code Bisping. You're going to get 10% off your order. One more time, that is thehydrojug.com. The promo code is Bisping at checkout for 10% off your order. Okay, where were we? Before we move on, actually, let's talk about this. I mentioned Stipe Miocic there. Stipe Miocic would be, I think, stylistically, of course, we just saw Ngannou beat him. Is a tough fight for Cyril Gane because of the wrestling, and Ngannou just beat him. And of course, Stipe, and a lot of people are talking about a rubber match with Ngannou. But Stipe never called for that straight away, and then the landscape kind of moved on, So now Stipe needs a fight. And John Jones was supposed to fight Ngannou. We all know the story there. I'm not going to go through it again because it's boring, but that's not happening right now. Dana came out this week and said John Jones has been offered Stipe Miocic. Stipe apparently has already accepted the bout. They're just waiting to hear back from John Jones.
I mean, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I want to look this up right now while you were saying it, but I think that John Jones' management came out and said that he's not interested in that fight, which to me is a damn shame, because it's like, at that point, when are we going to see this Stipe versus, when are we going to see John Jones make his heavyweight debut? Because now you have to have Ngannou versus Gane. So what, he's just going to sit on the sidelines again for another heavyweight title fight?
I know, it's crazy. It's crazy. Listen, John Jones has had a wonderful career. He's had a stellar career. The man's basically undefeated and renowned as the GOAT. Okay, so far be it from little old me to sit here and criticize what he's doing. But you only get one career, and he's still young enough. He has got some time to sit around if he wants. But yeah, he dominated light heavyweight forever. Now he's moved up to heavyweight. You got to fight. And he wanted the big fight, and he wanted the Ngannou fight. And then I don't know what it is, contractual negotiations. He wanted stupid money. Apparently Ngannou wants big money as well. I hope they both get paid as much as possible. But ultimately, you can't just say, I'm going to go up to heavyweight and then sit on the sidelines forever. Listen, I'm not judging his actions or whatever. I just want to see the man fight. And Stipe, because Jones is going to be on the sideline now. Let's just imagine for 1 second that the contractual negotiations are done. They're not, but let's assume that they are. He needs to fight. And he's not fighting Ngannou anytime soon, and he's not fighting Cyril Garn anytime. That's because that's the whole point of the interim belt. They're going to fight one another. And unless he wants to sit on the sidelines, and I don't know how long that fight's going to be, later in the year, I would assume, hopefully before the end of the year, but you never know. What, is he going to sit out again and wait that time? Stipe is a great matchup. I mean, what a win that would be for John Jones to start. But his management said, I believe they want the biggest fights possible. Did you look up the quote though? Is that what you were doing?
Yeah, I think what he said here, he said it wouldn't make sense for it to be the top pound for pound fighter. So that doesn't make sense. So I think that's the way he's looking at it.
It wouldn't make sense to fight the top pound for pound fighter.
No, he's saying that the Stipe fight wouldn't settle the score on who the top pound-for-pound fighter is on the planet, right? He's saying that essentially the reason Jones is making the jump from light heavyweight to heavyweight is to shut down this pound-for-pound talk, say, I am the biggest, baddest dude on the planet. Stipe isn't that guy right now, so it doesn't make sense for John Jones to fight him.
Yeah, but neither's Cyril Garn, and neither's Francis Ngannou. No disrespect to either man, but there's never been the narrative that either of those guys is pound for pound the best person on the planet. Never. You know, that's been for people like John Jones himself, Georges St-Pierre, Khabib Nurmagomedov, and maybe there's one or two that I'm missing out, and I do apologize. Demetrius Johnson, maybe back in the day. You know, neither of those guys are even in that talk. So that, whilst that's a catchy headline and it's a nice excuse, maybe that's not the right word. Don't mean to be insulting, but that's not the right angle. That's not the correct argument. Neither man is fucking considered pound for pound best in the world. You know, so still, either way, whatever happens, I just want to see them all fight. Yeah. Stipe versus John Jones would be insane. And Garner versus Cyril Garn. Just quickly on that matchup. Sounds crazy, but I think I'd fancy Cyril Garn in that fight. Just simply because of the understanding of his body, his footwork, his weapons. Ngannou's getting better all the time, and he was certainly improved in that last fight against Stipe Miocic. And if he's applying himself in the gym, and let's say there's another 6 months happens, he can make more leaps and bounds. But as of right now, you can't argue with the fact or even be offended by the statement that Cyril Garn is technically a better striker, because he is. And that was on display Saturday night. And it was on display in many of his fights, you know. So, and he's got the size, he's got the power, he's got the speed, he's got the reflexes. All right, and Garner's got the power, you know. Still, I'd fancy Garn in that fight right now. They're not even fighting. It's not even matched up. We haven't seen the countdown. We haven't seen the training footage. We don't know what's going on. I'm just saying, nice and early, I've got Cyril Garn winning. Third round TKO. Let's go.
I don't know. I mean, like, there is, for certain, I think Garn is going to land more in that fight. You know what I mean? There's no doubt in my mind that the UFC fight stats is going to read out, like, whatever the final total is, Garn is going to have landed more. There's something about the way Garn was getting out of the way, backing straight up against Derek Lewis and just using, like, speed to get away from him that kind of makes me nervous. Like, Ngannou might have that extra gear where he can catch Garn and lay one on his chin, and I haven't seen Garn take one of those yet.
I don't know if you know this, Lewis, but Lewis Harrington. But anytime you get out of the way, you definitely want to use speed. you don't want to use the opposite of speed to get out of the way. I'm just going to casually take my time and slowly meander out of the way of these punches. If you're going to make an invasive movement, if you're going to make a defensive movement, you want to do it fast. You want to get out of the fucking way, okay? What was I going to say there? I was going to say something. Oh, you reminded me of something there. And again, I'm not going back to trying to shit on Derek Lewis. I'm not. But if you look at the fight stats, it had Derek Lewis landing 16 significant strikes. For my money, I didn't see him land one significant strike. I'm sure he must have connected here and there, but a significant strike should be something of significance that lands well, that has an effect on their opponent, that causes damage or causes them to take a backward step, maybe wobble them a little bit, stop them in their tracks, whatever. You know what I mean? I didn't see 16 of those. Sometimes I do wonder what these stat readers are seeing.
Yeah, I mean, it must have been, I don't know. Like, there was a couple of changes. I like, for instance, like when Garn for sure punched Lewis in the face, and Lewis for sure returned with an eye poke, and then Lewis was grabbing his eye. Like, that was just a weird exchange. But like, maybe that got registered because the referee didn't see it as a foul. It got registered as a significant strike. You know what I mean? Like, little things like that.
Yeah, whatever. We don't need to try and justify it. We're just shitting on the stat people here. Okay, just roll with it. Go with it. Shut the fuck up. Eye pokes are not significant strikes. Why are you making up ludicrous scenarios? Or perhaps the eye poke was counted as a significant strike. Oh, nice. Nice. Get it up. Get it up. Go on. Give us another one. Come on, Harrington. No, no, no. Bigger.
I have terrible allergies. I've been killing my mic. Whoa, I have not been sneezing. No,
we're not on the podcast. We can edit this bit out. Just really go on. Get those big greenies out. Let's go.
This is so gross. This is so gross.
Hey, listen, this is you. This is how
this is me. This is how I live my life.
You gotta turn your mic off for a second or whatever. Oh, bless. Oh, God. We've all been there, buddy. All been there. Co-main event, Jose Aldo. Man, age does not apply to this man. I think he's only 36, which doesn't sound old. Or maybe he's 34. I'm 34 or 36. I apologize.
I think it's 34. Yeah, 34 years old.
34 years old. So he's not old. But when you consider the body of work that he's had, he made his professional debut in 2004. So, I mean, that's 17 years on the planet, 17 years in the cage, fighting people, fighting at a very, very high level. You know, for the most part, he kicks ass, but, you know, just lately, ever since McGregor beat him, it looked like there was cracks beginning to develop. It seemed like maybe the end was nigh, the beginning of the end was coming when he lost those fights to Max Holloway. But of course, that's Max Holloway, who also is one of the pound for pounds, you know, but he's back now at 135 and he's looking sensational. I mean, Saturday night, he looked as good as he's ever looked. Combinations were sublime. He was finishing with beautiful leg kicks. The hands were extremely fast, mixing in the body shots really, really well. Of course, Pedro Munhoz, he's not walking the park for anybody. Pedro Munhoz is a tough mother effer. So he made it a very competitive fight. I think a lot of other opponents, you know, going into that would have had a possibly would have been finished. But Pedro's tough. Obviously, before that, he beat Marlon Vera, Cheeto, shout out Marlon. And Marlon's on a tear. Marlon's championship material, and he beat him. Okay, he was tactical in the third round, whatever. But prior to that, it was a loss to Marlon Moraes. But a lot of people thought he won that fight, even Dana White. I think everyone did. When he lost that fight by split decision, the crowd booed. I was there. So, you know, he's talking about becoming the champ. And it would be incredible to see Jose Aldo to go out there after all this time, all that time at the top, the king of Rio, okay, then he has a fall from grace to come back at 135 and become a champion. Man, what a story that would be.
Well, actually, it was kind of interesting. I liked his call out a lot because he stuck to it right before the fight. He had one name on his mind. After the fight, had one name on his mind. He's already fought Piotr Jan for the title. That didn't go his way. It is what it is. His focus right now is on TJ Dillashaw, which, for my money, is the most exciting fight you can make at 135 right now.
Well, his focus right now, and you're right, but his focus is getting the belt, and he wants to get to that belt. He knows after what happened with Piotr Jan the first time, he's in no position right now. Listen, great fight, sensational performance, and you're back on everybody's buzz list, if you will. But after what happened last year in Abu Dhabi, wasn't that long ago, he took a beat down. I think it was a fifth round stoppage, but, you know, Piotr Jan was by far the better man that night. Now, listen, every fight is different. I always say that, so who knows, with some tweaks and things like that, maybe a different approach. Who knows what went on with Jose, maybe a shitty wake-up, maybe the travel, the quarantine. The million things could have gone wrong, but whatever. A million things could have gone wrong for Piotr Jan as well. It's what happens in the cage, and that's all that matters. Everybody has obstacles. You know what I mean? People always go in injured. People always go in with little tweaks, or they've got problems, or they're arguing with the girlfriend. Maybe the diet wasn't good. They couldn't get access to the meals that they need. There's always something going on. You know what I mean? But it's our job as professionals to still be able to go through all that bullshit and then come out the other side and fight to the best of our ability. You know, that's what separates the really good people, the elites, from the average. You know, because the average people let these little things get to them, you know, and then they crumble and they look for a way out, where the elite say, all right, well, fuck it. You know what I mean? It is what it is. I'm still going to go out there and do my job. But yeah, Piotr Jan, he wouldn't get that. So it's a smart call out, because TJ Dillashaw just stole pretty much pole position out of everyone but Aljamain and Piotr Jan. He's the next guy in line. And that fight is happening, Piotr and Aljamain. TJ needs a fight. I think he's having surgery, though, so he might have to wait a while. But if he can beat TJ Dillashaw, and to your point, what an absolutely phenomenal matchup. But if he beats him, yeah, he gets a shot at the next champion.
So what I thought was interesting, Aldo called for the fight in December. He wants to fight. Dillashaw says that he is getting this knee surgery, but the recovery time should not be that long. It's not an ACL tear. It's a bucket handle meniscus tear, I think he called it. And he said the recovery time on that is only going to be a couple of months. So he should be, if everything lines up and he does want to take this fight, the two men should be able to go at it before the end of the year.
Yeah, I don't know about that, actually, because if it is a bucket handle meniscus tear, and his surgeon is actually my surgeon, Dr. Mora. And Dr. Mora, and I think he came on the show once. But anyway, Dr. Mora did a bucket handle meniscus tear repair. Bucket handle meniscus tear repair on Callum. Callum got that, had that. And it's kind of a tricky surgery. You know, it's not an ACL replacement or a tear or anything like that, but it's still a pretty in-depth surgery, and it is trickier than a typical meniscus tear. A standard meniscus tear, and I'm sounding like a doctor here, but I've been around surgery rooms enough over my years, it's pretty simple. That is quick. Sometimes you can just go in, cut around the tear, and it doesn't have to heal as well and doesn't take as long. But a bucket handle one is a little more intricate. It is a more complicated procedure, and it does take a little bit longer. So if he's having that done, what are we in, August, September, October, November? Yeah, maybe he could get it in November, December. Maybe, possibly. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But still, Jose, congrats, buddy. I know you're not watching the show right now, but if you are, well done, mate. It was absolutely phenomenal. What a great performance. What else should we talk about? What else will stand out on the card real quick? What did we open with? Casey Kenny. He lost by split decision to Song Yadong. I got to smile every time I say that name. I am childish, but still. Angela Hill, God bless her. She never got the job done. Angela, you got to respect her. Goes out there, fights her heart out. She really is a fighter's fighter. You know, she doesn't need a full camp. She's always training. She's very game. She wants to go out there. She wants to fight her way to the top. And she tries to, you know. Saturday night, Tisha Torres was just better. She was faster. She went first. Every time they exchanged, Tisha threw combinations, whereas a lot of the time, Angela was looking for just one here and there. You know, 115-pound women. There's not the most stoppages in that division. I thought Tisha looked really, really good. I thought Angela gave a good account of herself. But unfortunately, she just got out-hustled Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, it was rough, especially like it being the rematch. You know, Angela had been in there with Tisha, and, you know, Tisha Torres took her down time and time again the first time. And it felt like a thing where, you know, if Angela can keep this one standing, you know, she might have been able to win that fight. Now Tisha Torres goes out there and absolutely outclasses her on the feet. So it's like, is this just a styles make fights thing where Angela Hill is never going to get that fight back?
Well, she's lost two in a row now. Well, not two in a row, but she's lost two to her. So, yeah, they're not going to do that again. If you're Tisha Torres, why do you want to do that again? You know what I mean? There's nothing to gain or to accomplish from doing that. But still, all right, main card. Is there anything else we missed? Oh, Bobby Green, Rafael Fiziev. I suspected that Rafael was going to win that fight. When he made his UFC debut on Fight Island last year, man, geez Louise, I couldn't believe what I saw. The ability, the speed of his kicks and all the rest of it was great. And I love Bobby Green. Obviously, he came on the show. The man's got quite the backstory. You know, he really has been through lots of adversity in his life, and he's overcome all of that. The story is very inspiring. It's incredible what Bobby Green went through. So I was concerned for him in that fight. I thought, shit. Now, as we know, Rafael did win the fight. But I thought Bobby gave a really good account of himself. Bobby's awesome. You know, he was talking to him the whole time. He was calling him on. And when Rafael, who has incredibly powerful low kicks, when he was kicking him in the leg, he was shaking his head like, nah, that ain't shit, bro. That ain't nothing. So very, very fun fight. And I believe they got the bonus. So congrats to both men.
They did. They got the fight of the night bonus. This really confused me, though. One of the judges gave it 30-27 to Fiziev. Bobby Green won that third round so handily. Like, there was absolutely no doubt in my mind that, to the point where when the judge said 30-27, I said, well, then it certainly has to be Bobby Green winning this fight, because no one won any round more clearly than Bobby Green won that third round.
I do agree with what you said. I totally agree, because I had the exact same thing, because I thought it's clearly 29-28 for Rafael Fiziev. He won the first two rounds. Bobby got the third. Bobby walked him down. He was busier. He landed way more shots. Anybody, I think even Lucas, if I could tear him away from the iPad for 2 seconds and say who won that fight, he'd say Bobby Green. You know what I mean? So, yeah, and the first two rounds, yeah, Rafael won them. They were 10-9s. They weren't 10-8s. They were 10-9s. But when I heard 30-27, I thought, whoa, are we going to see a robbery for on Bobby Green's favor here? Because I thought the same thing. So it's a real issue. The judging is a real issue. They've got to do something about this. They've got to they've got to fix this. They've got to, because it's not fair. It's not fair on the fighters. Everything they go through, you know, to go out there and sacrifice so much and put your body on the line. You know, I could go through it, but everyone knows the injuries that I've been through, that we all go through. And you do it on your quest for success. Of course, you're trying to pay, you're trying to earn a living for your family, but you're trying to work your way up. And a win or a loss, a lot of the time, results in 50% of your money being taken away. You're a failure in your quest. You drop down the rankings. Maybe you lose a world title fight. The ramifications and the consequences are absolutely massive, and judges need to be held accountable. They need to be held accountable, and I don't know what's going on. I don't know if they're not paying attention. I don't know if they're just not up to the job. Maybe they're just not skilled enough and they don't have enough grasp of the situation of mixed martial arts and what goes in to fully understand, but it's kind of getting beyond the joke now.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. That one blew me away.
All right, listen, let's just talk about Blue Chew. You like sex? Well, you should. I mean, after all, that is how we are all here. And if you like sex, you're going to like BlueChew.com. Blue Chew offers a performance enhancement for the bedroom. Okay, we're not talking about erectile dysfunction, although if you have an inability to get yourself ready for the job at hand, if you will, this will help. But we're talking about a sexual enhancement for the bedroom. Listen, at the end of the day, what goes on at night when you close the door and you shut the curtains is between you. But listen, we all want to impress our significant other a little better. And that's where BlueChew.com comes in. You can get the first chewables with the same active ingredient as Viagra and Cialis. And chewables can work faster than pills. In fact, up to twice as fast. And the chewables can be taken on a full or an empty stomach. Now, to get hold of Viagra or Cialis, I don't know what your... I've never taken them, by the way. But to get them, I don't know what you do. But to get hold of the Blue Chew, you don't even have to leave your house. You can do it right there on your phone. You just go to BlueChew.com. You speak to one of their online physicians. It's free and it is cheaper than the other two. And it only takes a few minutes to connect with a BlueChew affiliated physician. And if you qualify, you get prescribed online quickly. No in-person doctor visit, no awkward conversation, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. They show up in discreet packaging and then you just go to town, baby boy. You just go for it. You just, wow. You thrill the senses. Now, Harrington, at this point in the ad, I would normally say, Lewis, you love this stuff. I am dreading saying this to you. I don't know where you're going to go with this, but Harrington, I know you're using Blue Chew.
I mean, certainly, sir. I'll tell you this. Ever since this new line of Believe You Me merch came out, and I've been rocking the Devil's Avocado shirt, I've been getting dates left and right. And I'll tell you, I need the Blue Chew just to keep up, right? Just to have that energy to go a couple of extra rounds, you know? Like, you schedule 3-4 dates in a day, you're going to need to be able to perform across the board. And you can get that kind of confidence for free right now if you head on over to Blue Chew. .com.
No. I'm sorry. Before you do the call to action, I've got to jump in there because we're trying to, I want people, I'm telling the truth. This stuff works. It's cheaper than Viagra or Cialis. You're standing there expecting people to believe that you're going on 4 or 5 dates a day, let alone a week or a month, a day. Listen, Harrington, please, if you're going to lie, keep it in the realms of reality. What the fuck are you talking about? But listen, if you do want to, step your game up, shall we say, please go to BlueChew.com and use the code BELIEVE. That's going to get you your first order for free when you just pay $5 shipping. Pretty good deal. BlueChew.com. Going to get your first month for free. All you got to do, pay $5 shipping. Harrington, please don't lie ever again. Okay, where were we?
One other big-time fight on this card that we didn't get to. Michael Chiesa lost to... the new superstar in the division, in my mind, Vicente Luque.
Yeah, no, exactly. Hold on, I'm just trying to text Rebecca. I've got to tell her, turn this. I am freezing. In this room here, the AC blows out. Whenever I'm in the house, I'm always like, it's too hot. It's fucking 100 degrees every day here right now, but it's always too hot. But this one room, it pumps out. I am freezing anyway, going off on a tangent, freezing. I think she'll get there. If I just put freezing, do you think she'll understand?
Yeah, for sure. Rebecca, and you are like... Dude, you and Rebecca have like a psychic connection. She can read your thoughts at any given moment. So, yeah, I definitely think that she'll get that immediately.
We have a response. I'll turn it down. There we go.
Woo.
Thanks, babe. All right. Anyway, great podcasting. Yeah, you're right. No. I'm glad you brought that up. Chiesa, Vicente Luque. Interesting fight. Obviously, we saw Michael the Maverick, Chiesa, using a lot of elusive footwork, side to side, dancing around, disengaging, staying away from Vicente. Obviously, Luque is dangerous with the hands, the feet, and the striking. And I give him a big advantage in that department. But typically, we see Chiesa from the get-go walk forward into a clinch, you know, push him up against the fence and try and get the takedown from there. I think what he was doing, he didn't want to do that too early because Luque is explosive and he has a diverse wheelhouse of kicks. You know, and he thought, if I do that too early, it's going to be dangerous. So I'll stay away and I'll make him chase me. And as I'm backing up and he's chasing me, then I'll just time it perfectly, get the takedown, which he did. And it was beautiful. What a great takedown. You know, Chiesa obviously been working that very hard. You know, to do that against a high-level opponent like Luque, very skilled, very well done. But unfortunately, that was his downfall because he took him down, as we know. You know, great reflexes and great instincts by Luque. Of course, they talked about it. They trained for that position. They trained. They knew what they were in for. You know, if you're fighting Chiesa, you're going to defend takedowns against the fence. You're going to train submissions off your back and a lot of submission defense, a lot of rear naked choke escapes, things like that. But man, unreal. The role that Vicente Luque is on now, I think it's time now that people really start, you know, putting him in those elite conversations. Of course, at the top of welterweight, you've got the champ, Usman. Then the big names up there, you know, Covington, Gilbert Burns. Who's the other one? Covington, Gilbert Burns, Masvidal, Leon Edwards. Luque is always just outside on the peripheral. He's just always a little bit he's like an afterthought when it comes to those guys. I think it's time now to put him inside there because he deserves to be in that elite spot.
10
I got
wins.
That wrong. I said elite spot or whatever. Elite spot.
He leaped into the elite.
He did. Yeah. Or maybe he didn't. He was taken down. The opposite of a leap.
Oh, yeah. Well, I saw that. That was clearly a mistake.
He fell into the elite.
Right?
He fell into the abyss of the upper echelon of the rankings.
Okay.
That's what he did Saturday night. That was his game plan. He said, I'm going to fall into the abyss of the upper echelon of the welterweight division. Kind of a mouthful, but I was like, whoa, impressive, Vicente.
Okay. I did not hear him say that. So that's, I was confused as to how.
Listen more.
Yes, sir.
Listen more.
I do my best. 10 wins in his last 11 fights, 9 of them stoppages. I mean, is there a scarier opponent right now to look across the cage from at 170 pounds?
Kamaru Usman.
Is he? As far as a finisher goes, Kamaru Usman made his bones. The Emil Weber Meek fight, I was only given 30% out there. He made his bones as a guy who's a boring, clinchy against the cage kind of fighter. Sure, he knocked out Gamebred Masvidal, right? But as far as a finisher goes, a guy who can put your lights out, Vicente Luque might be the biggest threat at 170 right now.
Kamaru Usman, how can you disrespect the champion like that? Listen, you're right. Everything you're saying about Vicente is fair. You know what I mean? I agree. The guy's incredible. The guy's incredible. But you can't take away from Usman. Yeah, he did come onto the scene. He was very boring. He did always talk about this 30% stuff that used to drive a lot of people crazy. Dana included. I heard him in interviews saying that. But he's evolved. For sure, and he's a dangerous man. Knocked out Gilbert Burns, knocked out Masvidal, knocked out Covington, you know, destroyed Woodley. You know, so you got to give him his credit, you know. Yeah, of course. I think people still think of him as Kamaru Snoozman, as Covington called him, you know. And he was back in his early day, but he's definitely evolved. And now working with, Trevor Whitman. Working with Trevor, he's just getting more and more dangerous. Who's he fighting next? Who's he fighting? Oh, it's Covington. Covington. Yeah. It's going to be a good fight. What do you think? I think Covington gets knocked out even quicker this time.
Yeah, I mean, Colby Covington has fought one time since then. He's beaten Tyron Woodley, who Gilbert Burns has also beaten, and Vicente Luque has also beaten. Like, there's nothing in my mind that tells me Colby Covington has made giant leaps and bounds since he last fought Kamaru Usman. I've watched Kamaru Usman make those leaps and bounds. So what are we talking about here?
Yeah, yeah. No, what are we talking about? You know, I'll tell you what we're talking about as well, because we're talking about all these fights. What's this? I'm hearing you block still, Harrington. Hearing you back, Harrington. Sorry about that little production note from our man, Brian. Brian, how you doing, by the way? I haven't said hello to you yet. Brian, are you there, sir?
Oh, we're all good. It's hot as fuck here in Queens right now.
It's what?
It's hot as fuck in Queens right now. It's like 90-some degrees.
With a lot of humidity?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well,
I look like a drowned rat. Yeah, it's fucking.
No, you look good. You got the Devil's Avocado shirts on, the pair of you, available at bymmerch.com. So check that out, guys. Got some other stuff on there as well. And I'm actually wearing a Violent Gentleman, which actually, believe it or not, designed the shirts and send them off to you and all the rest of it. So shout out, Violent Gentleman. Thank you for everything. We got other MMA news to get to, but I do want to talk about this. This was made the headlines all over Twitter, everywhere today. Anderson Silva is fighting Tito Ortiz September 11th on the Triller Boxing event, which is headlined by Oscar De La Hoya taking on Vitor Belfort. I don't know what to say. And then there was another fight as well that was just announced on that card as well, and that had some star power as well. So I don't know. Give me your thoughts, Harrington.
I mean, dude, my thoughts are, I just, come on, Anderson. Come on, Anderson. Just knock him out. Just knock him out. Please, God, dude. Like, I don't want to see Tito Ortiz box. Nobody wants to see Tito Ortiz box. Who's excited for this?
Well, Tito Ortiz is excited for it. I guarantee that. Because he gets to fight Anderson Silva at, what, 46 years old now? Of course, Tito's not spring chicken. You know, they're both going to get paid. I don't know what they're going to get paid. Hopefully, it's a lot, you know. But I was just, for Anderson Silva, listen, no, you know, Tito, good for him. He's going to go out there, get some money, win or lose. I'm not sure who wins at this point. But I really liked what Anderson was doing because he went over to boxing and he fought a legit boxer. You know, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., he went out there, he looked really, really good. If Anderson looks that good against Tito Ortiz, then I think Tito's going to have a really, really tough time with the speed and the range and the length. Anderson is just so skilled as a striker. But still, you know, Tito's, you know, you don't underestimate the man. But still, I was just excited to see if we were going to have somebody like Anderson Silva, even though at the prime age, or sorry, ripe old age of 46 years old, which is, you know, it's not the optimum time to be making, cutting your bones on the boxing scene. It's not. You should be fucking hanging up the gloves at that age. You should be coaching people. You should be commentating. You should be sitting on your ass drinking pina coladas like I was last week. But it looked like he was going to forge a way into the boxing world and really make some waves there. You know, and after what he did to Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., I thought, wow. Wow, because he looked so good. He looked like prime Anderson in there. He looked so good. So I was really excited to see what he was going to get next. I'm not hating on the matchup, you know. I'll still watch it. But I just wish it would have been somebody in the boxing space that was more of a, just more storyline there, you know. And like somebody, a boxer, not an Oscar De La Hoya, because I think that's silly as well. He hasn't fought for 17 years and he's fighting Vitor Belfort. Again, that's crazy. But still, I would have liked to see Anderson in there with somebody, obviously not a Canelo either, but you know, so I'm trying to think of the right name. I can't think of one right now.
How about Roy Jones Jr., the guy who he was supposed to fight when he was the champion 20 years ago or whatever it was?
That's the fight they should have made. That's it, because they were talking about it forever, you know, and oh my God, what a fight that would be. We just saw Jones against Tyson. Didn't look bad. Tyson didn't look bad either. I would fancy Anderson in that fight all day long. After the Roy Jones I saw against Tyson, no disrespect to either guy, legends, and the Anderson I saw against Chavez, I would have had Anderson all day long. And yeah, you're right. I think I'm not hating on the matchup, and God bless both men. I hope they make a killing. I hope no one gets hurt. But as a fan, yeah, Roy Jones, that is the name we should have seen.
So is this a thing, like, honestly, do you think Triller could be doing this? They've lost Jake Paul as a star already, right? The Paul brothers no longer fighting on Triller. Do you think this is them trying to just set up a star in Anderson Silva? Because I don't think Tito Ortiz is going to do well in a boxing match against Anderson Silva, who we just saw do great in a boxing match against a real professional boxer. I think this is, they're looking, this as a walkthrough, somebody to just help build up the credibility of Anderson Silva, the boxer. before the Roy Jones Jr. match.
I'm not sure. Listen, you can't underestimate Tito. You know, yeah, listen, Anderson will be the favorite and for good reason. You know, but Tito's a lifelong fighter. You know, for all his political nonsense that he comes out with, and, you know, sometimes he doesn't help himself, he kicks himself in the toe or whatever. What's that expression? Stubs himself in the toe. Fuck knows. He puts his foot in his mouth anyway, a lot. The guy's a fighter and he trains. He's done it for his entire life. So you got to give him his respect there. And of course, he trains with Jason Perillo, you know, and Perillo knows Anderson well, trained me for him, you know.
Perillo's in Tito's corner. This is a wash. This is over. I'm sorry, Anderson.
Well, fucking hell, that was a quick U-turn, Arrington. Jesus Christ.
I mean, Jason Perillo, look at the guy. Like, name one guy who's training at the hands of, who's Jason Perillo is training hands to, and I'll tell you, like, who I'm picking in that fight, period. Every time.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, Chito Vera versus Jose Aldo, who wins?
Well, we've already seen it once, and
that's
Jose,
my point. That's
Jose
my point.
Won. Jose won by the wrestling. Jose needed to take Chito down to win that fight because Chito was beating him up on the feet in the second round.
I totally agree. I'm with you 100%. That's exactly what happened. But still, yeah. So listen, obviously the Paul brothers have gone off. They're trying to be legitimate now. God bless them. They're trying to take, you know, they've gone to Showtime. It's a more prestigious event. If you're a boxer, you want to be on a Showtime or something like that. You know, it just holds more credibility. So they need to do something. And they've obviously saw this niche, you know, and I'm just... concerned isn't the right word because I honestly don't give a fuck. But for them, they're trying to fill the void. They had the Logan brothers or the Paul brothers, pardon me, and they need to fill that void. So they're trying to do it now with an Oscar De La Hoya taking on. Who's he fighting? Vitor Belfort. They've got Tito Ortiz, Anderson Silva. They've got all these people there. They're trying to do that. I'm not sure. I honestly believe that the big needle mover for them was the Paul brothers. As much as it pains me to say that, you know, they were the popular ones. They were the ones driving the sport or driving the thriller events, you know. And I don't think Anderson Silva at 46 years old, if I was the CEO of Thriller or if I was running the show, I wouldn't put all my eggs in the Anderson Silva basket either. The man's 46 years old. He's had a snap leg. He's been knocked out many times. You know, he's a legend of the sport. Will he help sell some pay-per-views? Yes. But I would not be putting all my hopes, dreams and money, all my capital budget on Anderson Silva's shoulders. No, you need a young guy. Oscar De La Hoya is not that guy. Who else we got on there? Who else we got? We got Anderson Silva. He's not the guy. There was another big fight just added to that as well.
I'm looking here. I'm not seeing it right now. I know they have, I think they have Ryan Garcia is slated to fight for them pretty soon. So that's pretty big.
No, that is big. That's huge. That's huge. But still, anyway, we're not here to talk about Thriller. September 11th, though, coming up fast. Are you going to watch? I guess I'll watch.
Yeah, I mean, look, if I watch Tito versus Chuck 3, I'll pretty much watch anything, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, that's what I was going to say before, because remember that, you know, Chuck versus Tito 3, it did not do a lot of pay-per-views. And that's with Tito Ortiz and Chuck Liddell, massive stars back in the day. Big storyline between the two of them. Their first two fights, UFC 66 was my UFC debut. That did big numbers. But the third one just fell to shit. I don't think hardly anyone bought that pay-per-view. So it's interesting, but I wish them all the very best. I do.
To be fair, though, that was a non-UFC MMA pay-per-view, which I just don't think those work, period. Like, I think there is something about the public perception of, like, the UFC is synonymous with MMA, and if I'm parting ways with, you know, my, you know, $50 or whatever it is to watch an event, and it's not the UFC, like, that's going to feel weird and wrong to me. You know, people don't know the promoters for boxing. It's just whatever. There's a boxing match on. I kind of want to see this. But if you don't see the UFC before an MMA pay-per-view, I just don't see anyone in the general public parting with money to buy it.
I understand why you'd say that, but also at the same time, for example, and of course he's the biggest star in the sport, but let's just say Conor McGregor fought out his contract with the UFC and Conor and Paradigm Sports Management put on their own pay-per-view. Guaranteed it'd do good numbers. It would struggle. It wouldn't do as big, obviously, because of the bells and whistles and the production machine and the hype machine and the marketing machine that the UFC has that is long established. You know what I mean? But I still think it'd be moderately successful just with Conor McGregor or a star of that, you know.
Okay, sure. That's, yeah. All right.
Yeah. But still, but you're right. No, I see your point. I'm not totally disagreeing with it. But yeah, there you go. I was going to say something. There was something in the notes that was really grabbing me, but I'll tell you what I'm going to go with because I'm trying to think about it. But Luke Rockhold, Sean Strickland, as we know, last week, was it last week or the week before? Sean Strickland beat Uriah Hall dominant fashion. Yeah, Harrington, give us a bit of background. Give us a bit of color on this. You've got the notes in front of you. Just read out the statements and whatnot. And then, Brian, get ready to play that video from Sean Strickland as well. Sean did not like it. But apparently, Dana offered Sean the fight a while ago. Luke wasn't interested because Sean hadn't done enough in the sport yet, which I kind of get. You know, listen, if you're Luke Rockhold, and we have a bit of fun at Luke's expense, but the guy, you know, he did big things at the sport. He was a very dominant champion at one point. He was a Strikeforce champion, I think, at one point as well. You know, he's had some big, big wins. And he had a big fall from grace, but whatever. But he's still a name. He's still a very marketable name. You put him on a fight card and people want to watch. And he didn't want to take on Sean Strickland, and I get that. But then he said, listen, Sean went out there. He beat Uriah Hall. He beat a ranked guy. He's like 7 or 8 now. And it's Madison Square Garden. So he's like, fuck it, let's go. But they've been having some back and forth, correct?
Yeah, he also, like, in that whole thing, you nailed all the big talking points. The one thing in there, he also called him a fucking idiot because of the way he was talking about, you know, shooting a man. You know, we talked about that just a couple of weeks ago. He also said at one point, Strickland did, that he would like to kill an opponent in the octagon. And Rockhold is like, yeah, you're a fucking idiot for that one. Sean Strickland took a lot of umbrage to that statement.
Yeah, well, but he is a dickhead for saying that. You know, nobody should wish to kill their opponent in the octagon. You know, we've all got families to go to. We've all got homes to go to. And that's the thing. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you want to beat the shit out of your opponent. And if it gets personal, you know, then you really, really want to do that, you know? But wanting to kill a man, I want to win a fight. I want to knock him out. I want to be able to look back at my handiwork afterwards and go, yeah, I was too much for you. I was the better man on the night. But I don't want anybody to die. Call me a pussy. But I don't want to take away the father of a young child. I don't need that on my conscience. And just as being a good person, I don't want anybody to die. And we said Sean's a bit of a psycho. Sean wanted to kill a guy, wanted to pull that trigger. Now he wants to kill a guy in the octagon. Are you okay there, Harrington? I see you. For the audio-only listeners, Harrington's drinking water and he's dripping it everywhere through his beard. You good, buddy, there? You having a little moment?
Yes, I'm fine, Mike. I'm fine.
Yeah.
Keep moving.
Still, we got a video. And fair play. Listen, fair play to Sean. Fair play to Sean because he's right, you know. Sean trains down at Ruka sometimes. So there's Rockhold, you know, so they come across one another. And Sean's point is, well, if you're talking all that shit, just be prepared to do it in person. Because Sean's like, listen, I'm prepared to take a felony, you know, or a misdemeanor or whatever, because I'll beat your ass in public. I don't know if he would, but we'll see. We'll see. Brian, play the video, please, for the peeps.
So I just thought, I'm enjoying my week off, and a bunch of people have been messaging me that Luke Rockhold's gonna run his mouth, call me a fucking idiot, and nobody. You know, and all these things, they might be true. But I'll tell you one thing, man. Me and you might never fight. I don't care about fighting in a cage for ego reasons. I like to get paid. It's something I enjoy. But I'll tell you fucking one thing. You just can't live in a radius of me and run your fucking mouth and not expect for me to hit you in the face. We don't need to fight. That's fine. But I'm going to run into you at Ruka. I'm going to see you in the parking lot. I'm going to walk up to you and smack you in the fucking face. And you seem like the kind of pussy that runs his fucking mouth and gets hit and then calls the cops. But you're such a smug, cocky motherfucker that I would probably take a misdemeanor charge just to fucking smack you and watch your fucking head bounce off the ground. So again, man, we don't got to fight, but don't fucking run your mouth because I'm going to see you again and I'm going to smack you in the fucking face. So
I mean, listen, whilst I disagree with some of what he said, the sentiment of what he's saying is fair enough, you know, because at the end of the day, that's who we are. We fight, you know, and I don't think that would fly down at Ruka. You've been there once. It's a very, even though it's a place where violence is practiced, it's a boxing gym, it's a martial arts gym and all the rest of it, there's a very cool, friendly vibe in there. And I've never seen, well, the only time I saw was with Sean and what's his face? The
Orlando.
Yeah, Orlando, sorry. Sanchez. Yeah, Orlando Sanchez, yeah. That's the only time I've seen like a near fight breakout. you know? And if Sean doesn't want to get banned from Ruka, just wouldn't be smart. People don't want that. People don't want that. You can't be going into the gym and starting fights. But that aside, I kind of agree with what Sean is saying, because he's right. You know, we do fight, and you're going to talk all that shit. Well, we're just going to save that for social media. You know what I mean? If you want to fucking talk all that shit, then say it to my face. You know, so while I wouldn't advise doing it down at Ruka, because it won't fly, because they don't want that. It's a corporate place. It's a factory. The clothing brand RVCA, that's in their headquarters. You can't be having world-class fighters fucking throwing down on the car park. There's a public store. There's people coming. There's children around. You can't do that. But still, the sentiment of what he's saying, I don't necessarily have a problem with it.
It's just so funny to me that there's like next to the Ruka gym, there's also like just a skate park where local kids come. So there's a chance you could see Luke Rockhold and Sean Strickland. The only people who are going to watch that fight are like some 12-year-olds who are cutting class. I'm just super excited for that. Do you agree with the sentiment that one slap from Sean Strickland would have Luke Rockhold's head bouncing off the pavement?
I think he's giving himself a little too much credit there. You know what I mean? Hey, God bless him. He's riding high. He's full of confidence. Sean's a tough guy. He's a good fighter. And I want to see that fight. That's an interesting fight. It's a good fight. It's a risky fight for Luke Rockhold. I'll tell you that. Just because where is Luke at? We don't know. We don't know where he's at, you know? Obviously, he was an extremely dominant champion, and I'm not bigging myself up. I beat him, and then Yoel beat him, and then Jan Blachowicz beat him. All by knockout, which is the troubling thing for a Luke Rockhold fan. So all by knockout, and so is the chin still there? But we're talking, obviously I'm in there, but it's not my point. We're talking elite fighters. We're talking Yoel Romero, who was one of the most powerful motherfuckers on the planet, you know, so explosive in the world champion. Jan Blachowicz is known for Polish power, and he's now the light heavyweight champion. You know, I beat Luke to become the champion. Do you know what I mean? So they're all high-level fighters, high-level situations. Sean isn't at that level yet. Of course, there's nothing to say that he can't become and he can't reach that level and become a future champion and all the rest of it. And I'm sure in his mind, he thinks he can. And certainly from the guy that I know with his skills and all the rest of it, he probably could. But it's a very interesting fight for both men, because Sean Strickland, I don't even want to say for Luke Rockhold, is kind of a gatekeeper if you're going to go on to become a champion, because that's what it kind of looks like. I mean, Yoel was always championship material. I became champion when I beat Luke, and Blachowicz went on to become champion. You know, for Luke Rockhold, it's a tricky fight, because this time last year, most casual UFC fans didn't know the name Sean Strickland. He's kind of like the new kid on the block. He's outspoken. He's very exciting in his fights. Relies predominantly on his boxing. Luke's taller. He's faster. He's more flashy. He's got more skills. Probably he's a better athlete. But he's also older. He's also 36. And he's also been knocked out a few times. So it's... it's an interesting one. It's a risky fight for Luke. It really is. All right, let's just take a quick second to talk about Paleo Valley Beef Sticks. Listen, if you listen to the show, you know what I'm talking about. We're talking about 100% grass-fed beef sticks that taste delicious, low-carb, high-fat, healthy for you, and don't contain all the nonsense. Why is that? Well, Paleo Valley Beef Sticks contain only 100% grass-fed and finished beef from American farmers who practice rotational grazing. Now, why is grass-fed so important? Well, 100% grass-fed beef contains more calcium, magnesium, potassium, zinc, phosphorus. I could go on all day, but you're not interested in me going through the periodic table. What you want to know is how good these are. Do I like them? Yes, I do. That is the question. I have them in my house all the time. They're fantastic on the go. If you need a little snack, if you're going on a long road trip and you know you're going to want a little bit of something to eat, but you don't want to stop because you haven't got time. That is my life. But also, you don't want to eat the shit from the gas station. That is where they come in. I grab a few from the drawer, put them in the car, and when the mood takes me, when they tickle my fancy, when I'm a little peckish, what do I have? I have a 100% grass-fed beef stick, because other than the ones from the gas station, they're not full of crap. They're not full of chemicals. They're not full of mechanically separated chickens, brominated vegetable oil, monosodium glutamate, basically a ton of things that aren't good for you. Harrington, you're on the show. tell the people how they get involved if they want to have some Paleo Valley beefsteaks.
Yeah, I mean, really, what you got to ask yourself is, do you want to look like Harrington, a guy who has certainly lived most of his life off of gas station beef jerky? And the answer is no. Nobody wants that kind of life. I'm you know, turning things around, and a big part of that is the Paleo Valley. I was able to go there myself and get some at paleovalley.com. I used the code BELIEVE15. That's BELIEVE15. I got 15% off of my first order, and you can do that too. So head on over, paleovalley.com. Use the code BELIEVE15, BELIEVE15, to get 15% off your first order today. Let's get back to the show. Oh, Mike, speaking of Sean's and Luke Rockhold, Sean O'Malley has a bit of an issue with Luke Rockhold now. So apparently Luke Rockhold was drinking in Montana, got a little bit too drunk, and started talking to Sean O'Malley's dad, just talking a ton of shit about the fact that Chito Vera won the fight against Sugar. This was an odd one, and Sugar did not seem to enjoy the his dad getting berated.
Yeah. Well, listen, Sean. Sorry, pardon me. I'm doing it again. I always get people's names mixed up. People, oh, he's got CTE. I haven't got fucking CTE. I'm talking very fast. I'm looking at Harrington. It's distracting. Okay, and I get names mixed up. No, Chito and Luke. They've become pally. They have a blossoming bromance. They're friends. They're good friends. So, of course, you know, he's proud of Chito, as am I. Chito's doing great things, and he beat Sean O'Malley. So what was said, though, because I know you put it in the notes. There's actually the quote there verbatim. Just read it out for the people that haven't seen that, Harrington.
Okay, let me see here. Luke was drunk and he kept telling my dad, Chito beat your son's ass. I guess they trained together. My dad said Luke was super buzzed and he kept saying, Chito beat your son's ass. Why would you be like that? Unless my dad was saying something, you know, what I think it was. Luke said, don't you know who I am? And my dad said, you look familiar, but I don't know. So that probably pissed him off. I don't know the whole story.
So it hurt his ego a little bit. Listen, I don't want to sit here. I can't. I train with him. I see him down there every blue moon that I'm in Ruka. But you know, we're good now. We're good. I see him. And, you know, I saw Luke on the Submission Underground, that Australian podcast, and he was on there. And they were asking him about it. I didn't see the whole thing, but I saw one little clip. And Luke went as far to call me not too bad of a cunt. which I get it, you know, that's as friendly a compliment as that Luke could give me, and in a British or Australian version it's not too bad, it's actually friendly. So thank you, Luke, you're also a cunt. I get it. Listen, he's friends with Chito. I didn't like the fact that he's talking shit to Sean's dad, though. Do you know what I mean? And I'll be honest, and again, I'm not trying to talk shit about Luke, but I have been there myself. 2014, after I beat Kung Lee, in the morning after, I was there in the morning, and Luke was drunk or hungover. Let's say hungover. We'll go with hungover. And we're all getting coffee in the morning, and he just started talking shit. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? I'm here with my dad, you know? Yeah. Hey, listen, fair play. He's sticking up for his buddy. But it's kind of funny that he's talking shit to his dad. But there you go. Harrington, you want to do plugs real quick?
Luke Rockhold does beef with dads across the board. That's pretty funny.
I know.
Yeah, sure. I would love to do plugs. If you enjoy this show, head on over to guestsitternetwork.com. Get yourself a 7-day free trial with the promo code BYM, and you can check out over 300 episodes of this show that you can't find anywhere else. Don't feel like supporting? That's fine. Head on over to YouTube.com and just click the subscribe button, because you can do that absolutely free. Same thing for iTunes, Spotify, the whole nine. Leave, you know, a nice review, all that stuff. If you like hearing, if you like me at all and you live in New York, stop by a show at Brooklyn Comedy Club. And if you enjoy comedy and listen to Mike talk, head on over to Tales from the Octagon, an evening with
stop.
Michael Bisping. No,
stop.
Right,
you're not here. You're not here to fucking plug your own shit. Just give the little limited copy that Lewis gives you for Gas Digital. And I certainly don't need you trying to sell tickets for the Tales from the Octagon tour, which is sold out almost, but there's still limited tickets available at myticket.co.uk. I don't need that, Harrington. So don't shake your shoulders like that and don't pull that face. Before we get out of here, I just want to give a special mention to Jacare Souza. Jacare, Crocodile Man, Alligator Man, whatever, he fucking Jacare the Alligator, the Crocodile, whatever, he does that thing and he does this, it's fucking annoying. I won't miss seeing that inside the Octagon. I won't, you know, the thing that he does with his hands. Never liked that. Always bothered me for some reason. But I will miss seeing Jacare in the octagon. He's a class act, one hell of a fighter, former Strikeforce champion, longtime middleweight contender in the UFC. And he's decided to call it a day. His record was 26-10. Unfortunately, he landed it on a four-fight skid, lost four in a row. Of course, last time was to Andre Muniz. Got his arm snapped there, which was surprising. But Andre Muniz, good, very, very good jiu-jitsu player. Before that, Kevin Holland knocked him out, which again was a very, very unusual one. We had Jan Blachowicz, that was a snoozer, and then Jacare Manson before that as well. So listen, Jacare, wish you all the best in your future endeavors. You're a class act inside the octagon. You brought a lot of excitement. You had some tremendous fights. Most recent one of memory that springs to mind was that fight with Chris Weidman. Absolute war back and forth. And then he ended it with a beautiful knockout of Weidman in the third round. So Jacare, yeah, he was one of the top players for a long time. Prior to that, obviously, he was one of the world's best jiu-jitsu players. And I remember at the time, obviously, I was fighting in the UFC and I heard about Jacare coming over. He's going to be in my weight division. I was like, oh, fucking hell. That's all we need. That's all we need, a guy like Jacare. But yeah, whatever you do, buddy, I know you're not listening to the show, but I wish you all the best in your future endeavors. Yeah, there you go. Before we get out of here, Brian McKay, do we have any questions? Let's see what we've got.
Yeah, we got a question here from regular contributor Dallas Singer.
All right, Dallas, thank you very much. Keep the questions coming. bympod@gmail.com. If you want to send us one, the funnier the better, the more random the better. MMA related, fantastic, but we prefer random nonsense to end the show on. But without further ado, Brian, press play.
What's up, guys? Dallas from Staten Island. Got a quick question for Mike. We already know that Callum is a world-class wrestler. Now we see he's pulling golds in gi and no gi jiu-jitsu tournaments. My question for you is, does his wrestling background help out more in his jiu-jitsu, or does his jiu-jitsu help out more with his wrestling, talking competition-wise? Love everything you guys do. Got mad love for Lewis, baby boy, doggies all around the world are emerging, the believers. Brian's the man. I always end this with a, you know what, F. Harrington. I'm not going to do it. Got to show my guy Harrington some love. He always holds it down. Maybe if Lewis isn't there, he's coming with the facts, the hammer fisting with Harrington. Support everything you guys do. I'll leave you with this. Fuck Harrington. Fuck Harrington. Always
God,
Harrington.
God.
Fuck Harrington. Fuck Harrington. And fuck Harrington. Fuck Harrington. Fuck Harrington.
Oh, my God, that's great. That is fantastic. And well done, Dallas, because I was going to say, you do not speak on behalf of the Believe You Me collective. If you could see Brian, when I came on this show, when I logged in at the start, Harrington and Brian were having quite the to-do. They were going back and forth. Brian was raising his voice, the voice of God, getting a little bit annoyed. In fact, Brian, come on here. What was going on? Because we started the show when I logged in at first, and I went off for a coffee or something. I went to get a drink, and when I came back, obviously, they were being respectful. They didn't want to argue on air or argue in front of me, but I hung back behind the camera and they couldn't see me. And I was listening away for quite some time. And Brian was like, hey, don't speak to me like an asshole. What was happening, Brian, in your words?
Sometimes Mike doesn't press buttons good.
Yes. He presses my buttons good.
Got him.
Anyway, just messing there. We appreciate you all, and we appreciate the question, Dallas. One more time, bympod@gmail.com. If you've got a question, if you've got a video, if you've got a song, a rap, whatever it is, send it in. Question about Callum. This is actually interesting as well. Does his wrestling help his jiu-jitsu, or his jiu-jitsu help his wrestling? Well, it's this. It's very, very simple as well. Because he is winning a lot of tournaments recently. He's been entering a lot of jiu-jitsu competition, trying to get the experience and things like that. And it just helps with his mental preparation when he's wrestling. You know, the more tournaments you enter, the more you go into a one-on-one environment, the more practice of that you have, the more you get used to dealing with those game day feelings, those nerves, the anxiety, all the rest of it. Again, this goes back to Derek Lewis, what I said at the start of the show. He's not a guy that came through the martial arts world that has a lot of that when he was a kid. He's just got into MMA. He's got big hands and he's worked his way to the top. Had he had a long career, a collegiate wrestling career or jiu-jitsu career or kickboxing career or whatever, maybe he would have dealt with that moment a little better, but I digress. Callum entered all these jiu-jitsu tournaments and he basically won it with his wrestling. He's got a blue belt in jiu-jitsu that he was awarded recently, but he'll be the first to tell you he's not exactly a submission expert. He has a knowledge. Of course, he has a blue belt, so therefore he has a basic understanding, has a basic knowledge, good enough to be a blue belt. But typically, in jiu-jitsu, the takedowns aren't very good. That's why no one style of martial art is complete. Certainly, jiu-jitsu isn't complete in terms of grappling because there is takedowns, but no one's using them realistically. So Callum takes people down, smashes their guard, you know, and he looks for submissions, and he's won some fights by submission. He gets rear naked chokes and things like that. But a lot of times, if he can't get them, he just uses his wrestling and pins them down. And at his last tournament in Garden Grove, bit of a rougher area around here, and he said the clientele wasn't too great, and they were all pissed off, and they were all jiu-jitsu purists. And Callum was just there by himself with his girlfriend, went in, gi, no gi, took gold in fucking both. But they were talking shit from the sides. They were heckling him. They were talking to a little old Callum. He's only 20 years old. He's got the sweetest little face ever. He's got in there by himself, and all these little assholes, right, are talking shit and like, that's not jiu-jitsu, man. That's not jiu-jitsu. And I wish I was there because I would have been like, well, fucking stop me then. Use this theory jiu-jitsu that you have. Hit a sweep. Submit me. Get on top of me. If you can't do it, yes, of course, you want to see somebody going for it. And if he can get it, he would have done it. But he couldn't in this situation. I think it was the final. And they were getting pissed off because he was just using his wrestling to maintain position and pass guard. Hey, he got the point. He won. Can't submit everybody all the time. But yeah, to answer your question, Dallas, and thank you very much. And I'm so hungry. I can't even think. I can't even talk, Harrington. Even though I'm doing a lot of it, I'm starving. As soon as I do this, as soon as we finish in just a minute, I'm going for sushi. I cannot wait. But to answer your question, he uses the jiu-jitsu to win the wrestling because he has enough of an understanding to stop the submissions and uses the wrestling to just smash everybody to pieces. Harrington, thank you so much for joining us. Anything you want to sign off on?
Two things. One, honor and privilege to do this as always. Two, good friend of the show, Darren Till, has a fight booked official. We have a date for it. So can we please get Darren Till on before he fights Derek Brunson on September 4th?
We'll try, but I know he's disappeared into training camp. He's taking this one very, very seriously. He's living in a little bedsit in a sketchy part of Liverpool, and all he's doing is eat, sleep, breathing, fighting. So he's kind of, you know, just focusing on the fight. But I'll hit him up. I'll see what he says. I said, listen, if you don't do it for me, do it for Harrington. But still, without further ado, we're going to say goodbye. Lewis will be back tomorrow. I think we're doing another show or Friday. I'm not sure. I'm marrying somebody at the weekend, believe it or not. That's right, Mike the Marrier, as I'm known in certain circles. I just got ordained recently. I am now a priest of the highest order. You'll hear all about that on the next show. My shenanigans in Mexico. I've got some funny stories to tell. Thought it'd be funny to say for when Lewis is here because he is a comedian after all, let's be honest. But still, Harrington, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, all you believers, thank you. Make sure you go subscribe, tell your friends about it, and spread the word. Brian, you're the man. Much love. Take care. See you in the next one.